Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Parkhopper John from WDWParkhoppers.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
We know that coming to Walt Disney World can be very overwhelming with all the fast passes, the dining reservations, even getting from attraction to attraction can be extremely overwhelming. But we've got a friend that can help you make your next trip to Walt Disney World even more magical. It's Ramon and Theme Park Concierges. You can visit themeparkconcierges.com or call them at 407-257-9973. Ramon and his amazing team of VIP concierges will take care of you from the moment you arrive at the park until the moment you go back to your resort. They can take care of you for a four-hour time slot or a full day. It all depends on what you need. They can take care of your dining reservations, your fast passes, and even make sure that you find even more magic hidden in the Disney parks. Well, contact our friends, themeparkconcierges.com, or call 407-257-9973 and tell them your friends over at the Disney Parks Podcast sent you. Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast. We are so excited. We have a very special guest. We have wanted to have this gentleman on the show for a long time. He's got an incredible history. He's an incredible person just in his own right. He's got an incredible story with Disney and history. There are things that this person has done that affect a lot of the things that we love about Disney coming to Walt Disney World, and I can't wait to share his story with you. But our guest tonight, Mr. Derek Johnson, wears many, many hats in his life. He's as a musician, he's written over 150 original songs, 23 cantatas, 2,800 musical arrangements, 32 books of choral collections, been involved in 98 record albums on 14 labels. He's founded and directed a group called the Regeneration, a touring ensemble of singers who traveled around for 12 years, millions of miles, over 12 million people in 6,000 concerts. As an author, he's written 12 books. He's written a Disney book. He's written a lot of leadership books. His newest book, Think Spots for Life, is awesome. He's got so much leadership in him. It's crazy. He's an educator. He's a speaker. He's a consultant. And that's not even scratching the surface of everything that Derek does. Not to mention, he's got a vast history with the Walt Disney World theme park. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Mr. Derek Johnson.
Hey, thanks, John. Nice to talk to you.
It's so great to talk to you.
That's quite a hefty resume there, Derek.
Tony, yeah. Sometimes I get introduced and the introduction is longer than my speech. That's crazy.
I cut some of that down, too. That's the crazy part.
I want to know how you fit it on a business card.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Yeah. Not very well.
Yeah, so we like to ask everybody, you know, how they came to Disney. So, you know, tell us how you came to Disney. How did your journey there start?
Okay, well, I'm going to take you way back, like 50 years, okay? I was at a church out in San Diego doing youth primarily. And music, which I really loved the music, but my job description was really more in youth and collegians. One of my good friends, a guy named Otis Skillings, who then was about the premier Christian arranger in America. He's my very best friend. Actually, he's my organist in my church for 13 years, and we swapped a lot together. I learned a ton of stuff from him, but we were having dinner one night. Our wives were busy cleaning up. He had two daughters. I had two daughters. And the girls were all playing out in the back of the house. And so Otis and I were sitting there talking. He said, "You're going to do this all your life? You know, be a youth pastor?" I said, "No, not hardly." He said, "Well, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? What would you do?" I said, "I would find 8 singers who could sing with passion and precision all the chords that I hear in my head and feel in my heart." And he said, "So what's keeping you?" And a great line. So I just said, that was the night I decided I'm going to do that. So I started to look for great singers. Put together a really quite astounding group in the late 60s called the New Sounds. It was the gospel folk group. But they got a lot of national recognition. We had a lot of touring, went to South America, did a bunch of, they were great, great singers, and discovered by one of the big show guys, Arthur Godfrey at his time, who was extremely complimentary and wanted us to be his next discovery. Problem is that all the kids are in college and I've got a job. We can't get discovered like that. But anyways, so he was really encouraging that what we had and the way we did it, there really was a market for that. So after 13 years at the church, which I dearly loved and a great time, I founded a group that John knows about called the Regeneration. And we traveled for 12 years, 500 concerts a year, which is 11 a week if you want to keep track, you know. And just had all sorts of wonderful experiences doing what nobody else had really ever done back then. We started in 1970 and we went for 12 years. In 1972, Magic Kingdom had just opened, and we were singing, the Regeneration singing in Jacksonville, Florida, at a lunch. We did a lot of noon Rotary, Kiwanis, Civitan kind of clubs. That's how I can do 11 a week. And we were singing there for about 20, 24 guys, and a man walked up to me, and he said, "Now, Derek," he said, "you guys should be singing down in the Magic Kingdom." I said, "Well, I know we'd love to, but you can't even do an audition. I mean, they won't accept anything because," and they told me later, they got 50 auditions a week and people wanted to come for money, you know, to be paid to sing there.
Sure.
And we'd have to have a whole staff just to say no and make people mad. Well, there's no point to do that. So we just say, Disney sang, "We'll find you. If you keep doing what you're doing, if you're what we want, we'll find you." And this guy said, "Well, I'm the guy that can get you there. I'm the electrical contractor who did everything at Magic Kingdom. And Bob Cross, who's the entertainment director for Magic Kingdom, is my best friend. So you call him on Wednesday," this would be a Monday, if you get him before I get to, I'll call him. "But I've got to get him. If you get him before I do, the answer will be no, and you'll never get in, because you're right. So call on Wednesday." So I waited kind of on pins and needles, and I called Bob Cross. This friend had given me his number, you know, and Bob said, "Oh, yeah, you're the guy I'm supposed to, the group I'm supposed to hear." And I said, "I'm the one." I said, when you travel like we did, you take bite-sized touring. So I said, "We'll be in Central Florida for the next 6 days." And he said, "Fine, just tell me, send me your itinerary, and I'll stop by." And so we're singing in Winter Garden, which is where, ironically, is where I live now. Just 1 mile away, there was a hotel there and with a restaurant in it. And it was noon. We're doing a Rotary. And halfway through the first song, Bob Cross walked in. He listened to the last half of the first song, listened all the second song. He turned, left his business card with my business manager, said, "Have Derek call me as soon as you're done. I mean, as soon as you're done." And he walked out.
Wow.
So I called him, and he said, "Man, you guys are more Disney than Disney." He said, "What we want to do is put a stage in front of the castle, because any Disney aficionado knows there was no stage in front of the castle when Magic Kingdom opened. For one simple reason, there was no stage in front of the California Disneyland. Therefore, since California ran everything, then you wouldn't have a stage in Florida. But entertainment wants to put a stage there, and that's Bob Cross. He said operations keep saying, who would ever want to see a show in front of Cinderella's Castle? And we say, only everybody.
Only everybody.
We want you to come in for 11 days, bring your group, because we had this patriotic show we did called Star Spangled Spectacular. So we had all the wardrobe, and I mean, we're all set to go. You just come and do your show, and we'll build a portable stage in front of the castle for 11 days, four shows a day. That'll give the audiences, you know, the guests, 44 shows to decide if they like a show in front of the castle or not. So we did. That was February of 1973, between Lincoln's and Washington's birthday. And it was, I mean, a huge success. They had people lined up. The guy named Tom Durrell, who was the big tech director for the Magic Kingdom in those days, became a really big fan of Regen. He loved the group. And, I mean, he put up bigger speakers than they had originally put up. Yeah. Huge. You could hear us at the train station. Now, we're in front of the castle. And I mean hear us. Not like, what does that sound? It's like you could hear what we were singing. And the crowds would line up on Main Street. They couldn't get to the castle. I mean, just stop everything. So operations, the only thing they didn't like was they couldn't run their horse-drawn trolleys because you couldn't get the tracks covered with people. So anyway, it really was a huge success. So then we came back for those same 11 days for four more years. They wanted us to stay and become Kids of the Kingdom, which I didn't want to do at that time because we were still traveling and had what I felt was a real mission for what we're trying to do. So they hired one of my alum to be their stage lead. They built Kids of the Kingdom to look just like us, five guys, five girls, which is exactly how it stayed until they took Kids of the Kingdom out, but 22 years later. Anyway, so then we were gone. We all said goodbye in 1977 in February. That was the last time.
Right.
But then we had an album come out, an a cappella album called Christmas in Velvet. I mean, it was sometime I could talk to you about that because that was an amazing thing. This is part of the story, so let me make it quick here.
No worries.
I was up in New York doing some writing for Radio City Music Hall, and Bob Yanni, who was the big the president of Radio City Music Hall and their creative director, got a call. I'm in a meeting with him. And with a guy named Don Pippin. And he said, Don, I've got to go to a meeting. You take Derek to lunch, come back at 2. So I'm with Don Pippin. I don't even know who he is. I never paid much attention to Broadway when I was growing up. Not that I didn't like it. I just wasn't in a place where I grew up in Oakland, California, which is not a theater mecca. And so anyway, I'm with Don, and I ask him what he did, you know, besides being musical director for Radio City Music Hall. I said, I got a lot of Broadway shows. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I've got 13 Tonys. Holy cow.
Holy cow.
I'm having lunch with a legend here. So we talked some more. And then he said, I've got one question for you. And I said, okay. He said, how in the world did you record Do You Hear What I Hear on Christmas in Velvet? I said, I beg your pardon. I mean, we're a little gospel group traveling around here. I got this Don Pippin asking me how we recorded that. He said, it's the talk of New York. Everybody ever has that album. Nobody can figure out how you did it. This was a double choir thing before you had digital. I mean, he was extremely encouraging. And then some way Disney got it. Now, we had left in February. March, they called and said, can you do that a cappella music live? I said, well, of course we can. They said, why don't you come down in December and come and do be Dickens carolers for 4 hours a day, the whole month of December, from December 1st through 24. We'll bring you, make you Dickens carolers. We'll do the wardrobe, everything. We'll house you. We don't feed you because you got to, I mean, no matter what, you'll be feeding yourself if you're with us or not. So food's on you, but we'll house you. and wardrobe and all that. So, and you do that. So 4 hours a day there. Then we want the group Regeneration to sing for a living activity scene called the Glory and Pageantry of Christmas. That's over now. It's in Disney Springs. Then it was the Village. I said, man, we'd love to do that. He said, it'll be a living nativity scene. We'll wardrobe our people, and which is to the manger. And and bring up, you know, bring angels, Joseph and Mary, then angels and shepherds and kings and townspeople, and it should be a great thing, just a free thing for the guests, kind of our, you know, our gift to the Gentiles, as one of the guys said.
Nice.
I said, we'd love to. I said, so where's the music for that? And they said, well, we'd like you to write the music. I said, okay. I said, where's the script? They said, well, we'd like you to write the script. I said, well, okay, I can do that, because it's just out of the Bible, you know, out of Luke chapter 2 and Matthew chapter 1.
Right.
Anyway, so I said, now, who's the narrator going to be? Because I would write it differently if he's very Shakespearean or if he's a little more casual, you know. And they said, well, actually, we'd like you to narrate it. So I said, oh, okay. So then Regen was there for December's doing a cappella. Then when Epcot opened, they called me and they asked if I'd like to put together an a cappella group for the American Adventure. And I said, yeah, as long as I don't have to do it full time, because that's not what I want to be when I grow up. You know, if I can do it as a consultant. And they said, absolutely. So you just tell us how much time you need and what it'll cost, and away we go. So then Voices of Liberty was born at that point in 1982. So
wow.
That's how I got into Disney.
Okay, so just to recap quickly for the people who are listening out there. Disney World opens Magic Kingdom 1971. No stage, no four-court stage.
Right.
Correct.
So then they bring in this vocal ensemble named The Regeneration, to sing as they build a temporary stage. And it goes over really, really well. And that goes good. Then they decide they're going to do a show there that they create. That's the Five and Five group of people. So let's just pause.
That was the Kingdom Keepers.
Kids of the Kingdom.
Kids of the Kingdom. Right.
So let's just pause for just 1 second. Imagine, if you will, listeners, what your Magic Kingdom experience would be like if there was no four-court stage. So there's no Dream Along with Mickey. There's no, you know, Wishes Ever After. There's none of that. So there's no, you know, dancing reindeer for the Christmas show. All of that stuff goes all the way back to Derek's ensemble, the Regeneration, coming in and doing this. Okay, so so we flash forward a little bit further, and the vocal ensemble goes over and does the Living Nativity, which will come back. Will probably come back a little bit in another part of the story that we're going to hear in a second. And then we flash forward a little bit more, and Derek Johnson creates the Voices of Liberty. I mean, that's just that, you know, and I've told you this privately, Derek, because, you know, we're friends. That still blows my mind. Huh. I could never imagine going to the American experience and not listen to the Voices of Liberty. Just a phenomenal ensemble.
Yeah.
And you've had your hand in two incredible pieces of Disney history.
Yeah, well, it was for them, and the stage is over there. Yeah, in Disney Springs, up in the, up by Lego, the Lego store and all.
Yeah.
That stage there, see, that stage was built for the Living Nativity.
Really?
So that's another stage we left behind,
I did not know that. So that's right outside the World of Disney, where they do all the dance shows and the concert band.
But when they built it, there was no top over it. You know, there was just no super, it was just a flat stage.
Right.
And it was really, which made it much more romantic, you know. So when we built the nativity scene on there, and I mean, there were some incredible effects of lighting and all the angels coming up, and we had a light looked like it shone down from heaven. I mean, it was an amazing thing that Disney did in that Living Nativity. You know, and of course they fixed it up so it could be used for different things. And that show, it ran for 19 years. The only reason it stopped was because they used to be a pottery chalet that was farther back from the stage, and they tore it down. That's when they put the big toy store, the big Disney store in, whatever they call that. And that took away all the audience, the room for audience. So there's no reason to have the show. It was an expensive show, and if you can't get people to see it, hardly any reason to keep it going.
Right.
But it ran for 19 years.
So before we get into the big ticket item, the Christmas item, I'm trying not to give too much away, Derek. That's why I'm talking.
Oh, great. Give anything away you want.
Yeah. Before we get into the big thing, not that Voices is a big thing. I want to talk a little bit more about Voices, but you were just a consultant for Disney. Were you ever on staff? I don't remember. Please forgive me. I don't remember. Were you ever on staff at Disney? You were just a consultant.
I was always a contract person. I was a consultant. Yeah. And listen, and I will say this. I mean, I love Disney and everything about it. But see, being a contract person like I was, I stayed way out of the politics. That's how you can stay. I was there 33 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how you can do that. Because, I mean, I was everybody's friend. I wasn't trying to get anybody's job. I was not competitive. Mm-hmm. And people could talk to me about any problems they had, any dreams they had, because I was a safe person.
Right.
You know? I didn't have an office when I'm writing stuff down, and you know, so I mean, I had a great time. It was wonderful, a wonderful time.
So
great company.
When you created the Voices of Liberty, and they were permanently housed in the American Pavilion, how long did you stay involved with them after the creation and the implementation of the group?
25 years.
So you were still creating music and still creating. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of the process, just because not everybody knows the behind the scenes of it all? Could you give us a little bit of the process, like if you're bringing a new piece of music in for the Voices, kind of how that process works from you create it, you implement it, how that implementation process, what does that look like for, you know, the performers in the show from dreaming it up to performing it?
Let me take one half step back. When I came in there, I thought when they hired me to do Voices of Liberty that I was coming to Heroic, and I found out after I got there, it was really a California edict that they wanted this a cappella group. They wanted me to direct it, to produce it, to staff it, to write it, but that all came from California. And of course, Florida people were not really thrilled with California edicts, understandably,
right.
You know, but I didn't know that. So I came in, and boy, oh boy, I was not popular at all. In fact, my first meeting with the entertainment director at Epcot, he told me, he said, "We're giving you a 6-month contract because we don't think this is going to work. Singers are not entertaining, you know.
right.
Dancers are entertaining. Bands are entertaining. You know, trombones are good. Drummers are great. Bass players are terrific. Singers are not. So we don't think it's going to work. So you have 6 months." Contract. So I said, well, okay, then let me write what I want to write. I don't want to sit through committees and have to get approval. And he smiled. He's a nice guy. I like him a lot. And we're still good friends, this guy who's the entertainment director. But he said, just go ahead and have a good time. So I did. I just started to bring in what I wanted, and I crafted a show because you have to have openers, you have to have closers, personality kind of songs where you involve the audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that stuff gets, you know, factored into a show. Well, the interesting thing was when we went to audition, Disney had really no singers on property. They had three who were fine vocalists up on the top of the world, which, you know, on top of a contemporary. Used to be a big restaurant thing up there with a stage show in it.
Yeah.
But that was very Broadway kind of singing, you know, very, very, you know, brusque and big voiced. Well, for what I do, I don't need that kind of voice. We have to blend. We become an ensemble. So our first audition we had, and I didn't know that all the singers in those days, they were all dancers who lip-synced. Everything was pre-recorded vocally.
Wow.
The band was live. They played good click crack. So everything was pre-recorded. They didn't have any singers. So we had about 30 people come to the first audition, and we only hired three, and all three of those had worked for me. In some group I had, you know. So we really had to scratch really hard even to get a group up. And I called, and it was nine people from Regeneration. Fortunately, the group had ended that, so nobody had gotten into a big career yet. So I could call some really great singers in, you know, to work at Disney because they hadn't. I mean, I'm not taking them out of careers at all. They were thrilled to come. And then we found some others from Fred Waring, who was a great choral guy. So, but nine of the first 16 were Regeneration people.
Wow.
And it's, I mean, that's really how we started. and I was guaranteed that the singers would have a year contract. They would be there for a year. I'd be gone in 6 months. But we worked really hard, you know, and those are the great times because everybody, all the singers dove in. I mean, let's see how far we can kick this ball. Let's make this as great as possible. And so from day one, and Ron Logan, who was my uplink at Disney, ended up being senior vice president of creative entertainment and was always and still one of my very good friends. But Ron was always so proud because he said, you know, because he's the one that had to give clearance for a Voices of Liberty group because they had six other groups they wanted to bring in other than us, you know, the Cloggers. Can you imagine Cloggers in the American Adventure?
No.
You'd still be here. Are you kidding me? You know, and Pickers, you know, country group. I mean, she had all this stuff. So I just kind of came in. But Ron was the guy who ultimately said, okay, I'm signing off. This is Derek's the guy, and this is the group. So there we were. And we were all, from day one, we were always were the number one in all the surveys, the number one attraction for the in-house groups, you know, the continuing talent group, the everyday groups. Voices of Liberty, always number one. And the only two groups left from Epcot opening today are Voices of Liberty and the Mariachis. You know, I mean, otherwise, all the other groups have come and gone. Yeah. And there've been some great groups.
Yeah.
But we always were number one in all the audience surveys, which was very nice. I'm not about me, but that's how hard the singers work. Because let's make this thing really happen. And then President Reagan came through. In about 1983 or so, he spoke to I think it was the students, you know, all the foreign exchange students who come in, you know, to populate the venues around Epcot.
Right, the international college kids. Yeah.
And he was there to speak to them for some big thing. Anyway, so he was up on the third floor of the American Adventure, which, of course, it is a big, great green room, holding room for everybody. Always, it's a lovely spot. And he was up there waiting for everything to subside so it would be safe for him to leave. And we knew he was, and he had to come down the elevator and walk through the American Adventure through our floor to get out to the back where the limo was to take him to his next appointment. And we knew his favorite song was Battle Hymn of the Republic. And we've got a real stunning thing, arrangement that, I mean, it's bigger than life.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And as he got off the elevator, we're standing, and I've got a picture. John, you've seen it on the wall.
Yes, sir.
In the house here, in Debbie's Wall of Fame.
Yep.
And the singers are facing the elevator. And as he gets the elevator doors open, we started on the third verse, In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born. You know, it's really lovely, and then it gets bigger, bigger. And he stopped, and the president stopped. And in the picture, the only people are there is Dick Nunes, who then was the CEO of Disney,
right.
President Reagan, and two Secret Service guys, because the whole room, of course, was swept, you know,
right.
Clear, empty, to protect him. And he stopped, and one of the Secret Service guys came and said, "President, we need to keep moving. We're running late." And President Reagan said, "Nobody walks while the Battle Hymn of the Republic is being sung." And so he just stood there, and tears in his eyes when he walked out, reached his hand out and touched a couple of singers as he walked by to his limo after we finished.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Nunes came back by the next day to talk to that day, 4 hours later, to talk to the singers, and said, "All the president wanted to talk about was Voices of Liberty this last 4 hours. Never heard anything like it. The precision and the passion." He said, "A lot of people sing with passion, but they're not good. I mean, the pitch is bad. They bring their little words. You know, they're sloppy. A lot of passion. A lot of people sing with precision, but they're cold and they're dead. That doesn't hit your heart." He said, "I've never heard anything like those singers right there." So I got a call the next day then from this guy who gave me the 6-month contract, and I'm still in it, you know. He said, "Derek, if the president likes it that much, we've got to double the cast. We only have 8 shows a day. We've got to make 16 shows a day for the guests. So let's round up another cast."
Wow.
So I was extended for 6 months at a time for a while Then they finally broke down and gave me year-long contracts, you know. Wow. But that's how it started. I mean, it was very – just some things are supposed to be. That's all you can say. You know, you can't you couldn't write that out. You can't script that.
Right.
You know, this is our step. Here's the next step, next step. It just – it's their right time, right place, right people, you know, right moment. That's – then you live through that.
Right.
And so bringing music in, I kept on writing music. I'd bring in a couple of charts every week for a few years just to build up a repertoire. So I think right now they've got over 100 Americana songs and about 75 or 80 Christmas songs.
Wow.
You know, that, you know, they can pick up to do. They don't know them all at a moment's notice because you don't have much time to sing them, but they can pick it up in any of them in a day. Right. They've rehearsed them all at one time or another. So.
So when they were when they were actually building the building, did you have any say in that, or did it just work out that
again,
their performance areas was just that good?
It just that good. It was like that building was designed for us without them even knowing it. You know, the Italian terrazzo floor, all, you know, the dome, you know, for that kind of echoey feeling. We walked in. The first time I was down to Epcot was the day they opened the water to go into the lagoon. Took them 6 weeks to fill that lagoon.
Wow.
You know, that's how much water it took. And they were still building it. We started to rehearse in August of 82, and we'd been at it for a week or so. And our show director said, we should go over and let the singers sing where they're going to sing. So we went over to the American Adventure, and the floor wasn't poured yet. I mean, it was still all stringer gravel and stringers, you know, 2x4, 4x2. Where, anyway, you know, string to walk on. We had hard hats on. And, I mean, it was so noisy in there. Hammers banging, saws going, drills buzzing. We walked in just to get a feel of what it was, stood in the middle. And, of course, it's just my thing. I said, why don't we sing a song? And we really had one song polished. Because I always, and no matter what group I ever have, you always have one. So if somebody walks into your rehearsal, that's the song you sing. Because you want these executives to know you're doing really well.
Right.
You don't want to hear a bunch of mistakes. You want them to hear a bunch of mistakes, you know. So we didn't know Shenandoah. And it's really funny because they told me, you won't be able to use that song. I said, why not? I mean, it's incredible. Great song, and I think the arrangement is, you know, better than decent. It's too slow, and it's too soft. You won't stand a chance at Disney. You won't be able to do it. I said, okay, but it's still a great clinic piece. So we had learned it. So we're standing in this rotunda with all the workmen going on, talking, yelling back and forth, radios blaring. I said, let's sing something. And somebody, you know, with tongue in cheek, like, what? You know? And I said, that's New Shenandoah. They all laughed. And so we started singing, oh, Shenandoah, I long, you know. And, I mean, the radios went off. Saws stopped. Drills quit. Hammers weren't banging anymore. And the workmen all working up on the balcony. And they all gathered around the balcony, leaned on it, and stood listening in. And when we finished, I mean, it was so quiet in there except for our singing. And the men started to clap and hoop and holler and whistle. I looked at the show director, I mean, our lead, our stage manager, who told me we couldn't do it because it wouldn't work. I said, see? So, and it's still probably the most requested song that the Voices of Liberty do. It's very interesting, but all that stuff. So it's just fun to watch it. But yeah, the whole building just went up and you know, no, it was just built for us. They didn't know it, but it was.
Right.
So
whose idea was it for the Echo Choir?
Well, that was mine. I always love to do that double kind of thing. That's what it astounded the people in New York on that Christmas album. Is it was an echo choir, but we're all in a studio, so we just, you know, recorded it twice. But I've always loved that kind of antiphonal thing. And when we were really running with double cast, we did four echo sets a day, every day, when the cast would change. You know, take one, the four casts would be going off to take a break, and the new cast coming in, they'd come in upstairs. And so I wrote four arrangements, echo arrangements. No, that's it. They do that thing once a year now on July the 4th.
Yeah, we got to see it a couple years ago, and we didn't know it was coming. And I think Debbie might have given us a heads up that something was up, and but we still had no idea. And when the Echo Choir started singing, I mean, I'm thinking about it now, getting choked up. It's truly, and for those of you who are listening, so you have the voices, the main cast is on the floor singing Battle Hymn of the Republic, and there's a certain part where the other cast of another set of voices are in the upper, the next level, still in the rotunda, and they start singing as well and during one of the quiet parts, and then both choirs join together to finish the song, and it's powerful. I mean, it's the personification of the word powerful and moving.
Yeah.
It's so
well, good. And this one, Bob Yanni, who was, I might not be exactly accurate here, but to me, because I knew Bob quite well, he was like number, right under Walt Disney in the entertainment end of things. Walker was over on the operational side of things, but Yanni was the big entertainment guy. Right. I mean, he just kind of had his finger in everything. He did Super Bowl halftime shows, and I mean, he's the guy who was at Radio City Music Hall. He took that over and rebuilt it. And, I mean, that's who Bob Yanni was. And he told me one day, he came by, and it was an Echo set, and he said, "Derek," he said, "the finest show moment on any Disney property in the world is the Echo. This is it." He said, "Anytime I come by, I always say, tell me when the Echo will be, and have them do Battle Hymn." Yep. You know, yeah. And I'll take that. He didn't say the finest show. He said finest show moment. From Bob Yanni, I'll take the moment any day, you know.
Yep.
So it really is incredible. But it takes budget. You've got to have two casts to do it. And unfortunately, they don't want to run that. So, you know, that's how it is.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. One reach upon the stars.